Weekend Breakfast
on 702. Let's walk the talk.
It's good to have you with us. It's 9:35. Let me just remind you of our numbers. We have been asked to repeat them again, so I'm going to say it with a little bit more clarity. Forgive me if I've been rushing them. I've been so keen to get onto our topics. The studio number is 011-883-0702, and the WhatsApp number is 072-702-1702. And thank you for those who've been in touch with us. It's lovely to get your thoughts. It really expands the conversation. And you know what? We're getting professionals on the show, people who work in their fields every single day. So if there's something you want to know, get in touch with us. Here's another fascinating topic. I hope you feel the same way. We're going to be talking about the psychological impacts of whistleblower retaliation. And as we know, it's a big problem in South Africa. It was in Cyril Ramaphosa's first State of the Nation address and in his second one. The first one, I remember going through the list of what had been achieved, and as you know, you wouldn't be surprised to hear that the majority of pledges weren't achieved. And the one that really disturbed me was this one about whistleblowers and the fact that they are not looked after in this country. In fact, we know that they've been hounded with great success. And when you start targeting them, then you start snuffing out any information. So I'm just wondering if you know any whistleblowers. Have you ever blown the whistle? And how did you feel about that? I mean, are whistleblowers important to us? Why is it that they are being hounded?
702.
Let's walk the talk on 92.7
and 106 FM.
Very good morning to you, Jackie Garrick, author and founder of The Whistleblowers of America. It's good to have you with us here in South Africa.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here in South Africa. I am enjoying your country. It is beautiful.
I believe you've just been to see some beautiful animals. What did you see?
Yes, so of course we've been very interested in finding giraffes. So we just saw a bunch of beautiful giraffes this morning because we use the giraffe as our mascot because whistleblowers stand tall and stick their necks out. So we have really enjoyed that this morning.
I love that. But sadly, standing tall and sticking your neck out has quite devastating repercussions, not only in South Africa, but around the rest of the world. Why are they so targeted, apart from the obvious that they've got, they're telling unpleasant truths? What is it?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's a point well taken, that this is a global issue, and we see whistleblowers all over the world. In the United States, I was in the United Kingdom before I came here, talking about whistleblowers and retaliation. And obviously, corruption pays. So whistleblowers are targeted, maligned, have their character assassinated, they're gaslit. So it's to keep the cover-up and the wrongdoing from happening. What the whistleblower is trying to do is protect the public or patients. We were in, like I said, the UK with Dr. Day talking about unsanitary conditions and wrongful deaths among patients. So if you're a whistleblower, you want to prevent that harm. And in my case, I was a whistleblower at the Department of Defense over suicide prevention funding. So if you want to see those things prevented, you need people who are willing to speak up, and are only going to speak up if they know they can be safe and protected.
So Jackie's the author and founder of Whistleblowers of America, the real deal. Obviously, you worked at the Pentagon, you worked at the Defense Department, you speak to people who've been to Afghanistan, and I should imagine you hear some quite extraordinary stories. Tell us a little bit about your experience as a whistleblower and what then initiated the road that you're on now.
Yeah, sure. So it did start out because I am a U.S. Army officer. I was a social worker. And I spent the better part of 40 years, even though I hate to admit that, working with combat vets and post-traumatic stress disorder, suicide. And I was doing that work when I realized there was a similarity between a hostile work environment, bullying, retaliation, harassment, discrimination in the workplace, and the emotional responses I was dealing with combat veterans. So PTSD, things like nightmares and flashbacks and intrusive thoughts and alienation and isolation. being angry, being displaced. So all of that, very similar to what I saw with our whistleblowers. And from having multiple conversations, we decided to write the book because we thought, just like we saw with PTSD in the 1980s, whistleblowers needed to understand the same kind of taxonomy and have a lexicon to explain what they were feeling and what they were going through.
Mm. And what do you find? I mean, you touched on it briefly, the fact that they are abused mentally and physically sometimes. What course of action can they take when they are subjected to this?
So, I mean, that is really the place that is problematic. And I don't know that I've seen any one country do it perfectly. We see retaliation in the U.S., across Europe, and here in South Africa. Here in South Africa, it's been the most deadly for whistleblowers.
Mm.
So I think what we really need to do is start an international conversation on how we're going to protect their rights and hold perpetrators accountable. And that's really the purpose of my book, is to look at what I call these toxic tactics of retaliation. Things like gaslighting, mobbing, shunning, bullying, counter-accusing, or DARVO, deny, attack, reverse victim offender. So we see these tactics that are used against whistleblowers. We need to, one, teach them their lexicon, and then have a way of documenting what exactly has been done to them, which is what I've done with a whistleblower retaliation checklist, so that then when we go into court to hold perpetrators accountable, there is a standardized methodology for looking at how to make that assessment and then make perpetrators pay.
Mm. And they should. I mean, what disturbs me is that whistleblowers in South Africa are often seen as snitches, which is that's not what they're doing. They're providing a priceless service.
Exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, I think we fight that stigma everywhere.
Mm.
And I think part of the problem is the Merriam-Webster Dictionary uses things like snitch, rat, tattletale, instead of things like ethicist, truth-teller, lamplighter, as the synonyms for whistleblowers. And then because the dictionary definitions is like that, that's where Microsoft pulls in their definitions. So we need to have sort of this public outcry to get a better definition of the word whistleblower to begin to reduce the stigma, because every country should want whistleblowers. Every corporation should want whistleblowers because it makes the process better and it ends corruption. And I mean, as you probably are aware, corruption is 5% of the global GDP, which is trillions and trillions of dollars annually, is lost to corruption. So each country goes into national debt. Taxpayers pay for it because corruption goes unchecked, because whistleblowers go unprotected.
Mm. And as I'm sure you're aware, as are we certainly are in the grip of that. I mean, if anything, whistleblowers should be lauded. Is it a particular type of person who becomes a whistleblower? Do you find that there is a commonality?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a great question, as we've thought about what's propensity for whistleblowing.
Mm.
So we see there are definitely people who are public-minded. So I deal with a lot of veterans who enter this space, I think, because they feel it's their civic duty, but also people who are very professional and they care about their jobs. I mean, when I started whistleblowing, I didn't even know that's what I was doing. I thought I saw something wrong. I was reporting it. You know, we get training, see something, say something, that if something's wrong, you think it's just part of your job to fix it.
Mm.
So I think that's an important part, is that you want people doing that kind of work who do want to see something and go, wait a minute, let's fix this, and then reward them or acknowledge them, but not torment them and betray them.
So is this something that companies need to be taught about, and for companies to say to the people who work for them, listen, we have this space, it's a safe space, and we encourage you to speak out and tell us? And I mean, I just I assume that the fact that they'd even go to that length shows that they are trying to be clean, that it is a transparent company, and that there might be no need there in a place like that for whistleblowers.
Yeah, so I think a lot of companies have policies. You know, I met June Bellamy a while ago, and she's the Samsung whistleblower. There's no doubt that Samsung, on paper, probably has some great policies. It's how well are they enforcing those policies, and are they holding accountable people to mask, retaliate, fire, otherwise the whistleblower from that job? And we see that over and over again.
Jackie, let's just break it there for a moment. We're losing you, but don't go away because we want to continue speaking with you.
Weekend Breakfast
on 702. Let's walk the talk.
It's good to have you all with us. If you'd like to ask Jackie a question about whistleblowers, your experience, an experience that you've witnessed, give us a call, 011-883-0702. Our WhatsApp number is 072-702-1702. Jackie, you were talking about June Bellamy and the Samsung case. She's an incredible woman, isn't she? I mean, the bravery is quite something. But you were explaining to us about how companies can often acknowledge a problem on paper, but it's the follow-through that's often missing.
Correct. And I think it's follow-through that really makes the difference. And, you know, in the U.S., we have what we call, or what other people call, incentive or reward programs for whistleblowers. You can go to the U.S., like the CFCT, the Commodities and Future Trade Commission, or the Security Exchange Commission. And if you bring your case to the United States, there's somebody... an employee in South Africa can go make their complaint in the U.S. And if the information shared brings fruit and the government settles the case, then the rewards, the recovery, so the U.S. government gets it back its money, but the regulators in the country where the report was made, they get back their money. And then the whistleblower is compensated anywhere from 10 to 30%. So if you're reporting millions and millions of dollars in fraud, I mean, think about what that means to the individual whistleblower who can recover. And the reason that's important, I really want to stress this, is that once you get involved in these kind of cases, it becomes a full-time job. I mean, you're putting everything on the line. You're paying for your attorneys. You may sell your house, your car. You may have to move. I mean, we've seen whistleblowers who've gotten divorced. They become on the brink of homelessness because these cases can take 5 to 10 years to adjudicate. Mm. And all that while, the whistleblower is paying for the case. So when people demean the rewards or the incentive programs, the U.S. government, I can tell you, is very scrutinous in how it looks at these cases and only moves forward when they really have the right evidence. So whistleblowers are always encouraged to bring what they have as evidence so that it can be properly adjudicated. Mm. And then rewards are only made at the end of this whole very long process. So,
I mean, we could certainly learn a bit from that. What is there a textbook when it comes to whistleblowers and the sort of legal recourse that they have access to? Does it differ a lot per country? And I suppose it just is determined upon how whistleblowers are viewed and what relevance they give.
Right. Yeah, so it's definitely different country by country, with various things that maybe overlap or are similar. Like the U.S. has its incentive programs, the False Claims Act, and that's been in the United States since 1863, I believe, when Lincoln signed it. So we call it the Lincoln Law. So it just gives you an idea of how long it's been in effect. But it's based on key TAM laws that were popular in the UK even a century before that. So these are not new concepts. And we do see some differences country to country. I was just in the UK because they've got a bill going before Parliament to create an office of the whistleblower. So take it out of the employment tribunal spectrum, make it criminal, and give it a Goliath versus Goliath opportunity, because then the Office of the Whistleblower helps
Fantastic.
The case for the whistleblower. Yeah, I think that would, I'm very excited about that. And then they do have provisions for redress for detriment. So if the whistleblower is harmed in any way, emotionally or physically, then they can recover those damages as well.
Good. They get the respect that they deserve. And has it got worse, the retaliation with social media and the increasing abuse that we see across so many yeah. social media platforms?
Yeah, absolutely. So we call that cyberbullying or doxing, where the whistleblower is unmasked or they're harassed online. And this gives strangers an absolute opportunity to chime in, whether they know all the facts or not, right? And we've had death threats made against whistleblowers. Family members have gotten harassed. I mean, children see these things about their parents, and then they're afraid to have their mom or dad go to work. So it's I think it's made it a more adversarial process than it even was in the first place, which means there's a need for greater protections, because we've seen increases in suicide rates and substance abuse among whistleblowers because the stress just gets to be too much to bear. Physical problems, stress-related disorders like some of the autoimmune diseases, gastrointestinal, musculoskeletal, neurological, because that's what stress does to the body. Mm. So you can end up with whistleblowers who've had heart attacks. So there is a need for these protections, real protections.
I mean, I was a bit disturbed by what you said earlier on about how, I mean, obviously we see corruption across the world. There's no country that doesn't have it. But how, as you were saying, in South Africa, it's particularly brutal. And whistleblowers, the response towards whistleblowers is brutal.
Yeah, so I probably don't have to tell you about the whistleblowers in this country who have been murdered and whistleblowers that have been exiled. You say what Williams is, and I know one of the other whistleblowers is in Greece right now because they don't feel safe in their own country. And that's sad that we are in a place where we need to exile whistleblowers or give them, I know we were at a meeting the other day at the Mandela Institute, and they were talking about witness protection programs for whistleblowers. But one of the ideas we've also discussed, well, maybe then exiling to another country is even safer. So you don't have to give up your identity, but you can get out of the country faster. So I think there are a lot of solutions we need to start to think about as well to keep the whistleblower safe, so that we can end the corruption, because the corruption is the root of all evil, right? I mean, it's
really why
there's poverty. Mm. It's why there's substance abuse. It's why there's lack of health care. You name it, you go upstream of that problem, and you'll find that the financial detriments are what's causing every community across this country and other countries to have these kinds of problems, is because the funding gets misappropriated. Mm. And we see that in the U.S. too.
What are you hoping to achieve by traveling here? You've been to the U.K., the conversations you're having. What is it that you'd like to see?
Well, I think one is that we pull together for a global response to whistleblowing. I mean, it wasn't until veterans of all nations who had been to war explained their situation, and we saw a diagnosis of PTSD enter the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It took that international global effort to bring change. And I think whistleblowers need the same thing if we join forces. So when I talk to people in Canada, the UK, South Africa, Germany, I'm going to Israel after this. So when we start to talk to people all over the globe and we start to analyze different programs and different procedures, we might come up with a better way to make whistleblowers safe and to hold accountable the perpetrators. Real accountability matters, because that's the only way our countries are going to recover their lost funding. We're going to reduce the corruption, the GDP lost to corruption, and we're going to make people more safe. I mean, we see wrongful deaths and all kinds of losses, dirty drinking water. Who wants to drink contaminated water? Nobody.
So and that'll encourage together. Whistleblowers as well, won't they, when they see that the sort of experiences that they've gone through have been worth it.
Yes, we have to be giraffes. We have to stick our necks out. We have to stand tall. And we have to be able to have that vision for the future.
What is your advice to somebody who has seen something and they are frightened about speaking out? What should they do?
So definitely always talk to an attorney. Here in South Africa, you have Whistleblower House, which is set up specifically for whistleblowers. There is...
did you say Whistleblower House?
Yes, the Whistleblower House. That is my counsel. Like, my counterpart here is Cynthia Stimple, and she has, in the last year, set up a program similar to the ones I have in the U.S., similar to the ones that is Whistleblower UK, Whistleblowing Canada. We have to have these kinds of movements so that we are uplifting. High tide raises all ships. We have to learn from each other. We have to build networks because we are stronger together if we can speak out with one voice. So if one whistleblower speaks out, we have to get behind the person and the person needs community and support. They need voice.
Jackie, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off there. We've lost you, and it's probably about the right time anyway. Fascinating conversation. Jackie Garrick, a whistleblower herself, when she found wrongdoing in the Defense Department, and has used her own experience to write about this and to found the Whistleblowers of America. And she was telling us that there's a whistleblower house in South Africa. So if anyone has seen anything, if you've seen anything, please get in touch with Whistleblower House. And you have to do this the right way, because your safety is of prime concern. And we know that you are not, at this stage, well looked after in South Africa. And I should imagine that the Whistleblower House, you get all the advice that you need, the legal route and how to keep safe. Jackie Garrick, author and founder of Whistleblowers of America. What a fascinating lady. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us.